This free resource is from the 2013 Spiritual Leadership Conference in Lancaster, California, hosted by Pastor Paul Chapel in the Lancaster Baptist Church. This lesson is on planning for success with Mrs. Angie Zachary. Mrs. Zachary serves at Lancaster Baptist Church in Pastor Chapel's office.
This is a secretarial track, so the first thing I want to know is how many of you are secretaries? Oh, good percentage, great. I want to read a verse to you today that is kind of my life verse, I guess. But I think it applies a lot to, I'm not preaching the message from the sermon that was preached out of this verse, but I think it applies a lot to secretarial work. It's in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Sometimes in an office, when you're doing the same things over and over and over and over and over and over again, you can think, is this all in vain? And when you're telling the people around you the same things over and over, and you can think, does anybody listen to me? But it's not in vain. That's what our job is all about, is to do the same things over and over and over again, and teach and train and mentor the same people over and over and over again. And you know, if you're older like me, you get the young ones and they come up and you teach them all, and then they get married and move away, and then you get more young ones and you get to teach them and train them all the same things all over again. And I think that's part of the blessing that God gives us as older women, is the opportunity to take what you know and share it with younger people and then let them spread it all over the nation and the world. In a growing ministry, there are few places that are busier than the pastor's office. And therefore, if you have the privilege of working on a church staff or a school staff or in a pastor's office, you can be a great help and a blessing to your pastor, to your fellow staff members, to the members of your church family by working toward an orderly atmosphere in your office. When chaotic sometimes might seem to be more of an apt description, but I'm going to share with you a few things that I have found at work that help me make the church office a productive workplace. All of them won't work for you. What I'm telling you today is kind of a compilation of things that I've done in different ministries. I've worked now as a secretary in three different large ministries. And you know, in all of those ministries, what I've done has been different. A lot of what I do depends on what my boss wants me to do. And every boss is different. Some bosses are high-tech, man, they whip out that cell phone and they're in Evernote doing their deal and dictating, and the secretary's got it in China, and they're very techie. And I've worked for some pastors who don't even know how to turn on a computer as recently as a few years ago, and I kid you not. And they don't want to, and they're not planning to, and they're very happy for you to, and they'll just tell you all the stuff they want you to do on that computer. So all of these things might not even be necessary for you. But and I'm no good with remembering to do the little PowerPoint dealy while I'm running my mouth. So if you get to a place in your outline and you're thinking, where are we? I don't know, so just holler and I'll touch this thing and hope it does the right thing. How's that? I do all kinds of stuff on my computer, but I don't do much PowerPoint at my desk. So that's more for teachers. And anyway, first of all, I want to talk about our planning for success with God. And one of the most important things that you can do every day as a secretary is come to work prayed up. Because if you work in a normal work and church environment, when you get to work, you're going to run into frustration in some way every day, whether it's with people or machines. Computers are great when they're working. You're going to run into those things, and you need to come to work in the morning already having walked with God. And you need to, we joke in our office, at hectic times, we'll walk in and say, okay, I'm as prayed up as I can be. What happens from here, who knows? But you do need to be prayed up. You do need to be ready to walk in the Spirit with the people that you work with every day, so that what comes out of your mouth to other people is kind. And yes, there are going to be times when you're rushed, and there are going to be times when you're going to have to go back and say, I didn't mean to make you think I was being blunt or rude or whatever. I'm just in a hurry today. But you do need, the people who work with you don't have to be able to gauge what's going on in your office by how you respond to them. They shouldn't come sticking a finger around the door to test the temperature of the air before they ask you a question. Is today a calm day? Or maybe we should wait and ask that question tomorrow. You don't want to be that way. You want to be that they can come to you anytime when they have a question. And if you don't have time to answer, I can say, as I've said to Rachel Shriver on more than one occasion, can you give me 2 hours? can you go away and come back later? I'll answer that question, but not right now. But they don't need to have to wonder if they're going to get a kind response from you, especially if you work in the pastor's office. Nobody ought ever to wonder if they're going to get a kind response from you. You might not be able to take care of, is it hot in here or is it me? Is it warm? Okay. You might not be able to always do what they need right then, but you should always be able to kindly respond to whatever they're asking you about. Whether that's, I'm happy to answer you right now, or you're going to have to wait until, let's see, June the 15th sounds real good. So come to work prayed up. That'll help with spiritual success for the secretary. And while you're at work every day, there's no way that we can always anticipate what's going to happen. And you need to seek God's wisdom often throughout the day as you're dealing with people, as you're dealing with your coworkers. Letter B, let's talk about spiritual success for the pastor. You know, your boss is going to be more spiritual if he's not having to battle his frustration with your chaos. The more orderly that you are, the easier you make it for him to be a spiritual man. If he comes in and everything is in disarray, men don't do very well with that. And they want to choke you. No. they're very easily, you know, God made us as women keepers of the home, and I think there's a reason for that. I think men do better when they have an orderly home and an orderly atmosphere, and they don't feel like when their minds are not frustrated by the fact that everything at home is a mess. And I think pastors and bosses at churches do better too. When they feel like you've got it under control, they can relax and go take care of the people God has given them and go shepherd their sheep and go minister to the flock, because you got the office front. You got it down. They're all right. You're going to keep it all organized, and you're going to let them know where they need to be and when they need to be there. And they're not fretting about, I wonder if my secretary's going to forget to tell me that I'm meeting with the mayor of the city in the morning. Mm-hmm. You don't want him to wonder about that. You want to have an orderly enough work environment that he doesn't have to try to think about all the things that you should be thinking about. And he will learn to trust you. Once he finds that he can trust you, he will learn more to trust you. You know, a busy pastor always struggles to find time to pray and study the Word. And how we do our jobs, everything we do, can help him find time for that endeavor. You know, the Bible tells us that that really is his primary responsibility. But it's so easy for pastors to get caught up in, is the wrong word, but it's so easy for pastors to have demands put on their time that have nothing to do with praying and reading the Bible. And part of our job as secretaries is to relieve everything that we can so that our pastors and the assistant pastors who also minister through Sunday school classes or whatever also have time to devote to prayer and Bible reading. You know, you're going to find, at least I have found, that there are very few people who really want to interrupt their pastor's prayer and Bible reading. And it's possible you say, well, what do I say when they call? I mean, how do you tell them? Well, you can't talk to the pastor right now. I have found in almost every situation, if somebody calls me and says, you know, is pastor there? Can I talk to him? That if I say, you know, pastor's studying for his message right now, is this really like an emergency that I need to interrupt him? Or could he call you back later? So you haven't said, no, what do you mean? You need to talk to the pastor. No, I'm not going to let you talk to the pastor right now. He is studying the Word of God. You know, and you make them feel like a jerk, but you're giving them the option to back out of that gracefully if they can. I don't know that I've ever asked anybody that question. There was one time that a lady said, she was so sweet, she was a sweet little, well, my husband passed away this morning, so if you could just get him the message. Hold on, let me put your call through. You know, but that's rare. I mean, that kind of situation when somebody calls is more rare than not. But in any other time, I've never had anybody say, no, he can just stop reading the Bible and praying, and I want to talk to him right now. But you have to give him a graceful out. Let's see, the pastor's family, at least in all the places I've worked, would of course be an exception to that rule. If his wife calls, she can talk to him whenever, wherever, whatever she wants to talk to him about. What? Push my button? Push my button. The power button. Here? Oh, the PowerPoint button. Thank you. This one? No. Okay, next. Is that it? There are no arrows on this. There we go. That's it? It's coming up? Am I too far? There we go. How about it? Okay, buttons. Okay. Let's see. Let's talk about planning for success with others. First of all, other people at the office. I think it's very important that in an office environment, there are clear lines of responsibility. And one of the most common difficulties that I find in office situations that cause frustration for all of us is when there are those clear lines of responsibility and everybody knows what they are, but somebody's not pulling their fair share of the load. So may I advise you in situations like that, please don't fume. Please don't brew. Women are very good at brewing. You're brewing because she's not pulling her half of this cart. Don't brew. Deal with it. That's a Bible command. The Bible says if you have aught against someone, and come on, be honest, if she's not pulling her fair share, it's aught. I got aught. You need to go talk to her about that. And if there's some other person who has responsibility in that area or authority in that area, you need to go through the proper channels. Don't just let that brew. Be willing, always be willing, to step outside the lines of responsibility if there's something you can do to help. When we have a leadership conference around here, all of us do things that are not typically within our area of responsibility, and that's not what I'm talking about. But when there are clear lines of responsibility and someone is not coloring in their lines, so to speak, then that needs to be dealt with in an office situation. Don't just let that brew. Planning for success with others, letter B, there are the others at, oh, we got to do this little arrow again, I think. There we go. Lots of little arrows at the office, the others at home. Okay, the others at home. You can't have a peaceful, stress-free workplace if your home front is a disaster or a battlefield. When my children were little, I did editing work from home, but that wasn't full-time at all. It was just the occasional job here and there. But I worked when I was first married, then I took a vacation and stayed home and had three kids. And then I went back to work in the office. So I understand what it's like to work. When I first went back to work, my baby went to first grade, and I went back to the office part-time. So for a while, I worked part-time from the office, going home when the kids went home. And then I took some work home and did it at night after the kids went to bed. So I understand what it's like to work your work around your work. You know what I mean? Which if you're a working woman, you're probably working your work around your work a lot. So I understand what that's like, but without a plan, you will die on that battlefield. Don't be afraid to say no. Sometimes I think we let ourselves out of a feeling of obligation get overloaded, and we have more to do than we can reasonably handle. And you need to be honest with your pastor or your boss, and you need to be honest with your husband about what works for you. Your husband is given to you as the leader of your home, but if you're not honest with him about your needs, how can he lead? If he doesn't know how you really feel about trying to hold down a 40-hour-a-week job and have 12 kids, you need to be honest with your husband about what's going on in your heart and about what's going on in your head. Because he can't properly make decisions about what he wants you to do in the ministry if he doesn't know how you feel about what you're doing in the ministry. Come on in. So without a plan, you're going to die for your housekeeping. I don't know about you, but I hardly ever have time to clean my whole house in just one day. I don't ever have a day that has enough time in it to clean my whole house. So make yourself a schedule if you have to. One room a day. Or, you know, some people like to clean on the task. So today I'm going to clean all the windows in the whole house. Today I'm going to change all the bed clothes and do all the laundry in the whole house. And some people like to do the room method. They have their whole little cleaning thing for everything in that room, and they keep it stowed in the closet or in the cabinet, and they clean a room a day. Whatever works for you. Not the same thing works for everybody. But you need a plan. Your husband and your family don't need to feel like at the end of the day that you are last on their list. As wives and mothers, it's not fair of us for our children to get McDonald's because we've been serving the Lord all day. Now, I'm not saying that will never happen, But as a general rule, it shouldn't be let's see, Monday, that's KFC, Tuesday, that's Submarine, Wednesday, I think that's Taco Bell, and Thursday is, that's not to say you're never going to go out, you're never going to have a night. There are days when I leave the office and say, it's sweet tomatoes tonight. You know, I just don't even have the mental energy to think about it. But especially when I had children at home, my crock pot was hot all the time. And I made menus for like 5 different weeks, and I made a shopping list that went with every week. And so on my grocery day, I would send my children, who were by that time all up in grade school, and my oldest one was in 5th or 6th grade, and I would say, okay, here are all the things mommy needs to know if we have. I need 2 cans of this, and 3 cans of this, and 6 cans of this, and hamburger in the freezer. And my children went through my kitchen and my cabinets, and they checked off for me what we did have and what we didn't have. Voila, shopping list, all done. Do we have toilet paper? Do we have paper towels? Do we have, you know, a 6th grader and a 3rd grader, they can tell you if you have toilet paper and paper towels if they know where you keep them. Yeah. But children can be a big help to you. And then when my kids moved out, my daughter didn't call me after her first week of marriage and say, I have to go to the grocery store. What do I do? What do I buy? She'd been planning for the grocery store for about 10 years by that point. And my 18-year-old, when he worked one summer in Florida away from me and ended up in an apartment all by himself and working in the CLA office and cooking his own meals at 18, a boy, he was fixing, Mom, now how do I make that spaghetti we did? I know you put the tomato sauce and the stewed tomatoes and that little pack of stuff and the oregano. And I don't have any oregano. Is there anything else I can buy for that? And he cooked for himself all summer long, not hamburgers and hot dogs. But you do your kids a favor when you let them help you at home. It's a good thing for a young lady to know what to do at the grocery store and to know that, no, you can't go to Costco the very first time you ever go shopping as a married young woman and get everything you need. You put your husband in sticker shock. You spent $1,200 at Costco. You know, so there are valuable things that your children can learn because you're a working mom that other kids might never have the opportunity to learn. When my daughter was a senior in high school, one of her friends, she was talking about making homemade macaroni and cheese. And one of her friends said, do you mean like that stuff in that blue box? And Elizabeth said, no, I mean like making homemade macaroni and cheese. And she said, like how? She said, like you buy the macaroni and you buy the cheese and the butter and the milk. And the little girl's going, you can make macaroni and cheese like that at home? I'm thinking, how sad that this child doesn't even know that macaroni and cheese starts other ways besides in a blue box and a little white package. Now, I happen to love Kraft macaroni and cheese in the little blue box, but I can make it the other way if I need to. And I think that you can use the fact that you work in the church office as a way to be a real benefit to your children and things that they learn how to do that other kids might never have to learn how to do. They might not have that opportunity. But anyway, so the others at home, and you're going to plan your housekeeping, and you're going to plan your menus, and you're going to plan some family time with your husband first. Sometimes when you're a working wife, at least I have found that it's easy for me to let my husband get lost in the busy. I'm pretty independent. You're here? Okay, I'll fix you dinner. You're not here? Okay, I'll curl up and read a good book. That's okay too. I'm not a real husband-dependent woman. It's easy for me to go do my own thing, run my own life, run my own agenda. I mean, I love my husband, and I'm glad when he's there, but I'm not going to have a canary if he's not. And not all women are that way, and you may not be that way, and that's fine. But it, as a result of that, it's very easy for me to get so involved in my own agenda and what I'm doing that my husband's like, hello, I'm over here. Hello, I'm here. And sometimes he has to do that, and we have an agreement that it's okay for him to do that. Yesterday he walked into my office. Can you come here? I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm doing this, and he needed to ask me something. So finally he asked me twice, and there were 2 other people standing here and somebody over here, and everybody had a question, and finally he goes, look in my eyes. I need to know. And you need to be careful that your husband doesn't get too far down the list, because he is our primary and most important responsibility, even if we have the responsibility of the church office. Is my page mixed up? No, I just pulled out 2. Okay, number 3. Oh, I need to flip this little doohickey again, don't I? There we go. Planning for success in ministry. Number one, managing the flow of information. Okay, we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty. When a ministry is growing, the demands on your pastor's times are always increasing. And to help him manage his workload, you have to find ways to save time for him. First of all, I'd like to say that confidentiality is vital. No one in your church should ever have to wonder if what they tell you is going anywhere besides where they authorized you to tell it. And a lot of times, the people in your church, if your pastor knows something and he shares it with you, but he hasn't told you it's okay for them to know that you understand. There's no need for you to say to that person, well, you know, Pastor told me what you said, and da 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 da. In fact, you should not say to that person. Now, if Pastor tells you, call them and tell them da 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 da, so that it's okay with him if you make them aware that you're aware that you know what I'm talking about. But confidentiality should be vital, and there is never a time when it is appropriate for us to let a church member know that we're aware of what's going on in their lives, unless that's okay with your pastor and the church member, and you know it is. If you're a pastor's secretary, most of your voicemails are probably going to involve people asking questions for your pastor. Be very careful that anybody leaving a voicemail for you is aware that it's you that's getting that message and not your pastor. If your pastor's voicemail is not confidential, if it's not just for him, I feel it's only fair to a caller to be aware that somebody besides the pastor may be listening to that and to give them the option of what they want to put in that voicemail, knowing that information. Number two, be succinct. When you're typing voicemail messages for your pastor, you know, have you ever gotten one of those phone calls where they ramble like 5 minutes? And really, it was a two-sentence question. So don't type out the whole thing. And Miss Susie said that her brother Joe from Tampa is coming into town on the Greyhound bus number 42 on next Wednesday at 3:00 in the afternoon. And she's wondering if he doesn't need to know all that. Now, if you need to keep that information on file, that's fine. But boil it down. Be as concise as you can when you're typing up things for your pastor's questions. We use several different things here in this ministry. I don't know how many of you have Dropbox, Evernote. Okay, just a few. Those are two very handy, what they call cloud servers, and you can put things there and somebody besides you can see them. So, for example, if there's a phone log, we keep a phone log that several of us in our office have access to, so that when somebody calls in and there's information that all of us might need, it goes in that phone log and all of the pertinent details go there. And that way, because Pastor Chapel has 5 people who work in his office. So at any point, he may say to one of us about such and such a situation, la da 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 da. And you're thinking, I don't have a clue what you are talking about. And he'll say, call that man back, that da da da. And you're like, what man? So we have a central storage place where we all put things and we can go look, what man is he talking about? and I believe you would find that, depending on your situation, perhaps very helpful. We do a lot of times a table that'll say the date the call came in, who it's for, what the message is, condensed into as little information as it can be, and the pertinent phone numbers or any other information that's pertinent. That way, so when he's looking for a phone number, he's not having to read 4 lines of text that give him the whole history. He's just saying, you know, I think I just need to call that guy back. He can go and just in a flash, he can spot, oh, this is the column for the phone number. This is home, this is work, this is cell. And they're all labeled. The more you do that, the more time you save him. There's just no way to get around it. When you have verbal messages from your callers, when you're talking with people, either by phone or visitors to the pastor's office, it's okay for you to ask questions that will help ascertain what the person needs. If Mrs. Lake called my office tomorrow and said, she wouldn't do this because she just doesn't do that, but she called my office tomorrow and said, I need to speak with Pastor. I don't just go put on the phone log, Mrs. Lake needs to speak with you. Mrs. Lake might need to know, she wouldn't ask this question, but she might need to know what time the funeral service is next week on Tuesday. But people's first inclination is, I'm going to call the pastor and ask him. But you can probably answer a lot of questions if you'll just say, well, sure, I'll be glad to have him call you back. Can I tell him what you're calling about? Well, I'm calling about so-and-so. Is there any other piece of information that I could share with him that might help him have the answer to your question when he calls you back? So you've given them the option to say, no, I'm not telling you anything else. Or, sure, tell him blah, 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 blah for 2 minutes. And if he doesn't have to listen to blah, 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 blah for 2 minutes, you've just saved him 2 minutes. And a lot of times, if you can get the 2 minutes of blah, 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 you can get, and they might want to hear the answer from your pastor. It might be that kind of a situation. But if you can get the 2 minutes of blah, 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 you've saved him 2 minutes. You can go get all the answers that he needs and say, you need to call this person back, and this is the information you need to answer their question. So you've just saved him a whole lot of time. You've saved him 2 phone calls because he's going to have to call him the first time to get the 2 minutes of blah, blah, blah. Then he's going to have to call you and say, go find out, da, 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 da. Then you're going to have to tell him this is da, 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 and then he's going to have to call him back. So you've just saved your pastor a lot of time if you can just ask 2 little simple questions. Sure. I'm glad to tell him you called. What can I tell him? Can I tell him what it's about? And is there any other information I can share that would help him answer your question? And most people don't mind answering those questions from you. We keep call log. Dictation. How many of you do dictation on a cloud? Anybody? Your pastor does that? Okay, just one. So in Evernote, there's a feature. You have in these Evernote files what you call folders. And so we have a dictation folder. And when you have an Evernote account and your pastor has an Evernote account, you can share things, he can share things in his account with you. And so he would share his dictation folder with you. So when he's in China and you're in the United States of America and he wants to dictate a letter to Susie Q, he can dictate that letter on his iPhone into Evernote, and you can get it in the United States of America and type the letter and mail it out, and voila, it's all done. Okay? So if you don't know about Evernote, you need to learn about Evernote. They have Evernote for Dummies, nice books that'll help you if you're people like me who didn't know about Evernote. Dropbox is very similar. You can store files and things there, and other people can access them. There's also Google Docs, which is another cloud server, and you can share. When we're planning for this conference, we have a provision sheet in Google Docs that probably 5 or 6 people have access to, and it tells us everything about every speaker, whether their wife is coming, what hotel they're staying at, what time their flights come in, who their host is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all there, and so any of us who need it, instead of having to send 4,000 emails to each other to get the piece of information that we need, we all go to this one Google Doc that can be adjusted in real time. So if I'm in the document and Lauren's in the document and we're both making changes, we can see what the other person is doing and those things happen in real time. So there are just a lot of cloud server options that you have that will really help you as far as time savers. And you need to, I'm not going to sit here today and I can't teach you everything about Evernote in one 50-minute session. But it is a very valuable tool, and Evernote has a lot of good, once you sign up for it, they'll send you emails. These are helpful things that you need to know about Evernote. Did you know that Evernote will help you do this and this and this? Did you know this trick about Evernote? And they teach you lots of valuable things. If you're into receipts a lot and you have a phone that has a camera on it, you can take pictures of your receipts and send them right to Evernote. You can tag them so they go to a receipt file automatically when you send it there. It has many, many, many very helpful features for a secretary. So now that you're streamlining all that incoming information, I want you to think ahead. I think we already said that, but when there are questions or situations that require an answer, you're going to get that information before you ever ask him the question. To whatever extent your pastor prefers, you can get details from the people who are calling and asking for a return call. And in some cases, you're going to find, I think I already said that too, you're going to find that once you ask those questions, you can answer the questions, and a return call is not even needed from the pastor. Let's talk about email and written memos. With your pastor's permission, you need to encourage people in your office to put procedural questions and information that they need to convey in writing. And I've had it many different ways. In some places, the staff members can email the pastor directly. I had a pastor who didn't do email at all, so everything from staff came to me. It is very, very common for people not to be well acquainted with how to put things in an email format that is concise and easy to understand. And okay, out of this whole four paragraphs, all you really need to know is this one statement and these three questions. So you may find that it's sometimes necessary for you to reformat what you get from the staff as far as getting it then on to your pastor, whether he prefers that's in written form or email or whatever. But you want to, and you know, a lot of people can email, but many people who email have no training in formatting. They just start typing at the top and type till they get to the bottom. There are no paragraphs. There are no numbered points. There are no bullet points. It's just one big long paragraph. And so you may find that you need to, when I say reformat, that's what I'm talking about. You may find that you need to put that in, Roman numeral 1, Roman numeral 2 with subpoints, depending upon what the content of that email is. Be sure the font is readable, especially if you're printing something out. Don't let somebody bring something to your pastor that's in an 8-point font. At least I have worked for older pastors and they can't see an 8-point font. But we have standard fonts that we use for the church and the college and standard fonts that we use for our email. If you send out an email from him, if I send out an email, I'm supposed to format that in a Verdana 10 because it's easy to see on the screen. If I type a letter, I'm supposed to use one particular font for the college and one particular font for the church, so that if we see things coming back, we know whether it came from the church side or the college side, or, you know, we can start to track things. But you can set standards like that, that all of your secretaries need to format things in this font. Because otherwise, you know, have you ever seen some of those emails that you get? They have all kinds of colors in them, and everything's italicized, and this is green, and this is blue, and this is purple. And I'm like, whoa, eyesight overload. But you want something that's clean and readable and easy to see. And if it rambles, you're going to simplify. If you're printing an email, you're going to reformat to do whatever you need to do. Sometimes I find that highlighting or color coding a little bit is helpful. If there's a lot of information that is needed, and you need to know all of these things, they're all salient points, but there's one big question, then I might put that question in bold or maybe even red. Because sometimes if a pastor or an assistant pastor is busy, it's easy to get busy reading all this information and forget at the end that he needs to answer this question for you. You could highlight it in yellow, you could make it red, you could bold it, something just to draw his attention to the fact that, okay, now it's time for you to respond. Do whatever works for your boss. As a church staff member, if you have a daily or weekly appointment with your pastor, I find that there are some things that are just too much to put in writing. There are too many different nuances or context or whatever, especially in sensitive situations, that there are some things you just need to convey that verbally so that you can read your pastor's face and he can read yours. So hold those things aside, and when you have your appointment, talk about those. So letter B, managing your regular tasks. How many of you use Outlook, the email system Outlook? Okay. It has many, many valuable tools in it for organizing what you have to do. One of the primary things that I think is important for a secretary is a to-do list. And if you are like me, you're going to have some tasks that are recurring and some tasks that are just whatever the flow of the day is, that's what you have to do. But what we have to develop is a system for working through those to-do things and reprioritizing them all the time. Okay, it's kind of like triaging in an emergency room. Based on what's coming through the door next is how important this task just became. This might have been number one on your list, but when Evelyn Walther's husband dies, SLC just dropped down the list. Because Evelyn Walther is a 20-something year member here. And so at that moment, whatever she needs is more important than whatever I was just working on for leadership conference last week. And so as a secretary, part of your value to your pastor is knowing, okay, what's most important now. And so you're going to have to figure out some kind of a system for managing your tasks that helps you reprioritize on a regular basis. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I do with Outlook. That may not work for you. It may be some other system, but there are bajillions of books out there on getting things done, execution, how to run the world in 2 hours a day. I mean, you know, you can find it all out there. So I'm going to tell you just some things that I do in Outlook. If you can use them, fine. If you can't, that's fine. But go find a system that works for you. For one period in my life, I had a to-do list on my desktop that was my life. At that point, my boss didn't use email. I ran his calendar in a day timer, and I just had a master to-do list, and I had it grouped by home, office, and when I have time. And so I added all my to-do things there, and once every day I went through the whole thing and moved it all around and reprioritized the three different categories, and that worked for me. I carried it everywhere I went. Everybody in the church learned that if they found an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper in a 6-point font, folded up with a list of 99 things on it, it belonged to Angie Zachary, and you need to take it back to her because she had just lost her brain. When I told my, you know, I had it on a computer, but I always was writing little notes on it. But I would tell my children, often when they were teenagers, I lost my brain, where is that? You know, and they would go searching and they knew just what they were looking for. Little white piece of paper folded up in an 8-point font or a 6-point font with 99 things to do on it. And so you need to find a system that works for you. Coming here, everyone here works in Outlook. So over the last 2 years, which is how long we've been here, I have had to readjust my to-do list to Outlook because we all function in Outlook here. And so what has worked well for me is, first of all, in Outlook, you can color categorize tasks on your calendar, and your email and your calendar are tied to each other. So anything that I need to do, I have several different categories. I have tasks for Pastor. I have tasks for me, which is more likely to be my recurring tasks. Do I need to flip this little thing again? There we go. I'm more likely, you know, I have regular tasks, I have recurring tasks, that's more likely to be in my green. I have things that require an answer from other people. So for example, if today I send an email to Bonnie Furso, with whom I work, and I say, Bonnie, I need to know da 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 da. I blind copy myself. When that comes to my email box, I drag it into tomorrow. And tomorrow, I put something in the subject line that lets me know what it is, just a few brief little words, so that when I see it on my Outlook calendar, it's blue, so I know I'm waiting on somebody. There are enough words in it to help me identify just by glancing at my calendar the topic, what it's about. I don't have to open it up to read the email to see what the question was. Does that make sense? So there's enough in my subject line to identify what it is, so I can look at my calendar in a day, and I think I probably have 6 different color tags. And if you categorize your emails, you can also sort that by category. So if I want to see all of my outstanding questions for Pastor, I click sort in my email boxes and all the blue ones will go together, which is my questions for Pastor. So if Pastor comes by and says, do you have questions for me? And instead of saying, well, I emailed them all to you, you say, yes, sir, just 1 second. Click that button. Number one is da 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 da. Number two is da 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 da. And voila, you have all your answers at once and he never has to respond to those 6 emails you just sent him this morning. Okay, using a to-do list. If you have a secretary or a helper, you can also from Outlook assign that person tasks. From your computer, you can assign a task. You can set a follow-up time so that in 2 days or 1 day or 3 hours or whenever, you'll get a pop-up little dingy reminder that says, you need to check on Susie Q and be sure she did what you told her to do, okay? Because I find that the more things that are out of my mind, first you have to create a system that you can trust. And once you learn to trust your system, then you are freer to be nice. When I have a lot of things on my mind and a lot of, you know, sometimes I'm not always sitting at a computer. So I carry my little yellow legal pad and I'm scribbling all day long. And when I have a lot of things on my little yellow legal pad and they're not in my system yet, I don't feel like I'm done. I feel undone. I gotta get to my computer, man, and get this stuff categorized and get it where it needs to go and put it away. But once I put it away, I feel in control. I feel calm because I've put it all into my system for when I need to take care of it and who I need to take care of it with and who's gonna help me take care of it. And I don't need to worry about it until my computer goes ding, ding, and says again, you need to check on Susie Q to find out if Susie Q did what you told her to do, okay? So the more you can categorize and put away, the nicer you're going to be. And that's our goal. Maybe you're aware of this, but I didn't know it till maybe a few years ago. you can PDF an email. If you have an email that you think, man, I need to save that. So I have some folders over here on the side where I'll put stuff away for reference later, but really that's not ideal. I PDF and put into my server files, something that I think I might need in the future. Because computers are really good at doing searches, and if you just know a few words of what you're talking about, they can pull those things up. And of course you need a folder system, you know, within your files that you're saving. As much as possible, I try not to save paper. It's just, you know, it's just something to store somewhere. So I PDF most things and put them away somewhere out of my inbox. Now, you may be the kind of person that you like to keep everything in your inbox. And if you do, God bless you. I don't know how you get by, but it helps me to figure out what I have to do with everything in my inbox and put it away somewhere. Whether I'm going to file it, whether I'm going to drag it to my calendar to take care of later. That's just, it just helps me get that into my system. Let's see here. Also on my phone, I do, well, my phone's in my purse, but I do a lot from my phone with my email if I'm away from the office. And I have it automatically set so that it BCC, anything I send from my telephone comes as a blind copy to me automatically. Because I don't ever want to answer a question from my phone when I'm in Timbuktu and my mind is not on the office and forget that I told somebody I would do something. So if I automatically from my phone get a blind copy of anything, any email that I answer from my phone, then I've got an email in my inbox that tells me, do you need to do anything else about this? But clicking a delete button is very easy. And I would rather just have to delete that email if I don't need it than miss something that I told somebody would do that I would do because I did need it. Okay, let's go on to... cell phone reminders. How many of you carry a cell phone? I make it a habit to... this won't work for you if your cell phone is always on silent or do not disturb. I make it a habit to, when anybody stops me and says, would you pray with me about, would you tell pastor, would you give so-and-so the message, would you da-da-da-da-da, I say, you know, just one second, create event. And I put a reminder on my cell phone to ring me and remind me when I know I'm going to be where I can do something about it. I don't always carry a piece of paper. Sometimes it's just me and my phone. And so you can use that phone as a valuable way to remind you not to forget what you don't need to forget. Letter C, managing the unexpected. Look at there, I remembered. You know, ask for help prioritizing things when you need it. There are some times when everything seems like an emergency and you're thinking, what do I do next? I don't know what to do next. There are too many things to do next. When you aren't sure what should have your attention first, say so. That will help your pastor, and then he won't be frustrated with you because he feels like you're not doing what's important to him.